You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to The Fabulous Invalid, Broadway's podcast, where we present essential conversations with a curated roster of the best, most important, and innovative theater makers working today, from actors to writers, directors, designers, and everyone in between. We took our name from the title of a 1938 play by Kaufman and Hart that has since become a loving nickname for Broadway itself, always deemed on the verge of decline, yet always bouncing back, The Fabulous Invalid. I'm theater savant Jamie Dumont.
I'm Rob Russo, writer and theater critic with StageLeft.nyc and StageLeft, the podcast.
And I'm Jennifer Simard, currently starring in my pajamas on Instagram from my apartment.
I think we're all in our pajamas or some version of that. Yeah. And that's because this is our first recording where we are sort of living in a new world, right? Mm. We are all home. We are all self-quarantined. And times are different.
Times have changed.
Times have changed. The times are a-changing. Mm-hmm. That's a Broadway show title, I think. yeah, it is. Anyway, I digress. Well, we might sound a little different because we are not recording
together.
We're not together. We're not on our normal platform. We're recording on this terrific web-based thing that the Broadway Podcast Network has supplied us with, which is fantastic. It enables us to keep going. But you're going to notice, dear listener, over the course of however long we're doing this for, until we can be together, you're going to notice some not perfect sound quality. You're going to hear some background noises you probably don't normally hear, and you'll hear some variances just in terms of everyone's individual mics, because people will be calling in and everybody's got different equipment or no equipment at all. So,
but the show must go on, you know.
The show, well, and this is what The Fabulous Invalid is, right? I mean, this is we've gotten some criticism over our show title from people in the past, which I understand, but really what it means and what I think we all love about the title of our show is that it literally refers to Broadway always bouncing back and always on the ready to thrive. And I think that couldn't be more apparent than it is right now.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
Well, all right. Before we get to our guest today, we're very excited to have Rachel Chavkin, the Tony Award-winning director of Hadestown. We are thrilled to have her with us.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm such an admirer of her work. And she's not only a great director, I mean, she's a real activist, right?
She's someone
who is so engaged in our society and being a force for good and making change. And, you know, it's no surprise to me that she was someone who I don't know if we reached out to her or if she reached out to us, but that we found each other in this moment to have a conversation about responding to this pandemic, because, you know, she really is a leading voice in the community.
She is. And that is what we're going to talk to her about, right? Like, so yeah. I don't want to mislead anybody. We will have her back again to talk more in depth about all of the wonderful projects that she has worked on and will be working on. But today, I think we want to focus on the world events and what's happening and what you can do. And I think in time, we'll get back to the regular format of our show. We have some interviews in the can, which we'll release. God, that sounds terrible, in the can. But we do. We have them, and we will.
That's a saying, will, in the can. I don't think it's
I know. I don't know why. I guess I'm sensitive today. But we have recorded interviews that we will release over the next few weeks, and we will continue to record, and everything will get back to normal. Things may be slightly different, but that's what we're looking at.
It's a new normal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, Jen, I think you wanted to ask us something, right?
Well, yeah. I know that we've been talking about what we've been asking our guests, what piece of music, if any, or soundtrack or whatnot has helped get them through this event. And we've been asking them, and I thought it would be fun to ask each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have changed. We normally ask our final question is, what is that show or thing that made you want to work in the theater? And we've changed it. So yeah, we should, Rob, Jen, why don't you go first? What's on your heavy rotation right now?
Well, my favorite instrument in the world is the cello. And I have been listening to Yo-Yo Ma, and he's been doing frequent showings on Facebook and on Instagram of different songs that he thought might soothe people during this time, and sharing his gifts literally with the world. And I find it very comforting. And to me, it's the most beautiful sound in the world, the cello. So that's been my number one go-to.
I love classical music. I will say, I have a feeling, well, now that I've said this, Rob will pick something different. But right now, I'm obsessed with the Losing My Mind, the new Sondheim. Yeah. I knew I was going to do that. The new Sondheim Disco Fever album or whatever. I don't know what.
It's subtitled A Sondheim Disco Fever Dream.
That's it. See, Rob, I should have let you just take this one. I didn't mean to like shit all over it. But I will also say that a friend of mine in Australia sent me a album of Dorothy Loudon, who famously was Miss Hannigan in Annie on Broadway. But he sent me an album of Dorothy Loudon live at the Blue Angel, which was a nightclub in New York, very famous. And it is fantastic. If you can, it's not, I couldn't get it on Spotify, which is why they sent me the album. It is on Spotify, but I'm a tech disaster, so I couldn't figure out how to make it work. And at any rate, it's fabulous. Dorothy Loudon, literally any of her albums, she cheers me up because she's so kind of wacky.
And I'll just say, in addition to Losing My Mind, which is both a great song, a great album, and a depiction of, I think, everyone's lives right now, I've also, you know, this past Sunday was Stephen Sondheim's 90th birthday. And so I've been sort of doing my own little Sondheim tribute in my apartment. I've been listening to all of his original cast albums from all of his incredible musicals. But the first one I actually listened to was Pacific Overtures. I don't know why, but it was the one that was speaking to me on Sunday. So I'm putting in a word for Pacific Overtures. Great album. Great show.
Oh, it's a great score. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think we should probably turn it over to the delightful Rachel Chavkin.
Let's do it.
Great. Ooh. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today. As we try to navigate through these difficult times, artists, as always, have an important role to play in our society. What are some of the issues you're most concerned with about right now, and how do you see the theater community coming together to make a difference?
I think first and foremost, the thing that I find myself most worried about is the economy and how we are going to sort of recover. And I use economy very broadly in the sense of like the faith that there can be fellowship again and we can live life again, right? And thus buy things, right? You know, like it's all holistic and sort of part and parcel. And I think that the theater community, you know, is amongst the best because the nature of our work requires live fellowship. if only between you and one other performer. I'm thinking about like Christine Jones's Theater for One. But certainly most of the time we're doing this with a number of performers and an even bigger number of audience. The idea that we can gather in space together and heal together, even if that's about, you know, very sort of silly or off-topic things, I think is going to be a major part of recovery. And it may not be to where we have been before. You know, I think that to the second part of your question of like, what can theater be doing? I got a beautiful email from a dear colleague, actually Jim Nicola, who runs New York Theater Workshop and who is a sort of very deep thinker. And he was engaging me in just thinking about like, what should we be doing? Like in a really deep way as artists, like that was the presumption. It wasn't like, have you lost faith in art? Jim is, will tell you the importance of someone telling a story to another person as the Titanic sinks. And actually to a certain extent at that point, what else is there other than telling a tale that brings you some degree of transcendence? And if we want to get like super macro to climate change, we can say that's kind of where we are right now, which is not, you know, that sounds like I'm dismissing activists and the possibility of change. I'm not at all. But I do think that the value of a story is profoundly valuable. And so I feel like I'm going to be looking to just even my own theater to think about like, how do we create space for the idea of kind of radical transformation? Because I do think that that is what is required in this moment and likely will be ongoing.
Mm. Well, on Monday, you joined with Taylor Mack to launch Trickle Up. What can you tell us about this new project?
Yeah, it's exquisite. I mean, and you know, I take no credit for it because basically Taylor asked if I would do this and I will do anything that Taylor tells me to do. Taylor is one of a few artists and organizations that have helped put this together. And the idea I'm pulling up because I want to be, yeah, it's in the initial thing he wrote me, it's Here Art Center, it's The Flea, it's New Dramatists. So those are also three organizations that I trust the hell out of.
Yeah.
The idea was he went to people who he presumed, which certainly in my case is right, I can't speak for the other artists, but that we were probably okay financially based on the work that we're doing and where we are in our lives. But that A, we might know someone who is not okay financially. And I think he's, Judy specifically specified someone who really needs help, and particularly artists who are working near or below the poverty line. Mm. And who were deeply impacted by the loss of work. And there's been a lot of kind of giving trees and stuff, but what was marked to me about this and why I was so eager to get involved is the idea is actually to make grants of, and the word that they're using is commissions, of $10,000. Mm. And as someone who the first grant, my company, the team ever got, I believe was from the Greenwall Foundation for the amount of $10,000 in 2006. I can tell you firsthand like how profoundly altering that was for both me and our trajectory as an ensemble. And I love the use of the word commissions because that is how artists make at the kind of most grassroots level is, if you can feed yourself, if you can clothe yourself, that is what you are what is required to make the work. And so by investing in the artists, we're investing in the future of our field. And again, I think $10,000 is a meaningful amount towards that. And so the idea is like this wonderful network of, I was just on it. It's like Susan Laurie Parks is singing a song. Of course, she's a musician. And there's playwrights doing poetry. And my friend Lear de Bessonet is reading about the Federal Theater Project, which is like so perfect for right now. It's just, it's tremendous. And it's $10 a month. And you get access to all of this wealth of artistry, again, at the kind of most DIY grassroots level with totally substantial ideas. And 10 bucks a month, 10,000 subscribers, that lets us give out a lot of cash.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Thank you so much. It's Jennifer Rachel. Hi.
Hi, Jennifer.
Art, hi. I like what you just said, by the way. Like, such a hierarchy of needs going on here, from feeding yourself to clothing yourself, all the way up to what you said about having something that brings you a degree of transcendence. Artists everywhere are suffering, not just actors like me. And there's been a lot of focus on the Broadway community. However, all mediums are impacted at all levels. What is something that our listeners can do right now to help? And if you had to pick a thing in addition to what you just said, is there anything you can think of?
Oh, yeah. I've had a few people, and I always direct them to the Actors Fund, which, of course, serves all the disciplines in our field, not just actors, despite its name. It's the place with the biggest track record. You're not inventing a wheel. And they're so profoundly engaged and tied to all of the different unions and so many different like outlets for providing support. So that's where I've been directing people. And of course the other thing, which I have a little baby, so I have been, I have to say, fearful of how much outside volunteering to do because of exposure potentials. If I did not have a newborn in the household, or I should say upstairs, he's two flights up with his dad's, I would be volunteering for the food bank and handing out stuff, which does not help necessarily the theater community specifically. But of course, I think it's imperative that artists never think they are, you know, apart from the larger economy. And I sort of think about an artist the way I think about a factory worker in Reading or wherever, as someone who, whatever that job is, we're making culture widgets. Anyway, the food bank is there for all, including actors, including designers. And I would encourage volunteering there.
Well, it's so amazing to me, thinking about a point you made earlier, drawing the allusion to climate change. And, you know, my mind just suddenly thought of two very recent projects of yours, Hadestown and Continuity, both of which, you know, have a lot to say about how, you know, private actions ripple out across communities, and how, you know, the environment informs our lives and our choices and our futures.
Yeah.
And it's in this moment of pandemic, I mean, it really is laying bare a lot of the structural failures in our society that were already there. And I'm wondering, you know, how you see the art that you've created and the art that you will create as being sort of in conversation with this moment.
I mean, I'm thinking mostly actually about a piece called Reconstruction that my company, The Team, is making now. That is, it's a massive company of artists, I think 24 or 25. And it's a piece that is quite focused on race and interracial relationships as well as intra-racial. Very specifically, I'm now referencing Jillian Walker, who is one of our collaborators, performer, and writer in the piece. And this is based on something, a line of inquiry that Jillian brought into the room, but is the question of intimacy. And sort of all the, there's a bunch of different storylines in the show, but I would say all of them are focused around the question of how do we and can we achieve intimacy in an anti-Black America? And so it's particularly concerned, I would say, with whether intimacy is possible, and if so, what has to be achieved or done in order to do this between a white person and a Black person in America. And one of the ways that we defined intimacy is, do both parties understand the scope and depth of the exchange at hand? So even if that exchange is like two people sitting across the table from each other talking about where they want to go shopping that day, like everything that is a part of that interaction, can we approach like true depth of understanding and thus be intimate with each other? So that's a piece like where our goal, the thing that we have said in the rehearsal room as artists, is that we want this piece to be useful to audience members. We want it to be useful to people, white, Black, certainly other people of color, though, again, this piece is pretty specifically focused on those two sort of part members of our world who want to try to reach towards intimacy as a goal, but are maybe just awakening, or maybe I'm not awakened, or maybe you're like deeply along the journey of thinking about this challenge and how do we move towards a genuinely equal society, which again I think is very far from where we live today. So I guess that to me is like emblematic of the work that I hope to be making in answer to your question, is like work that is useful. It's why I love Hadestown so deeply, is because you know, it helps us think about all of the depth of the, you know, global degradation of like the physical world via industry and a scarcity mentality, which is where Hades operates from. But it also ends, even amidst the tragedy, with this incredible image of hope and the idea that like that the hope is in the courage to tell the story again and to imagine it might turn out differently. Amber Gray has talked about it because, of course, Amber herself is, I think, a deep activist and, you know, spends a lot of time via her work with Reverend Billy in particular and the Stop Shopping Gospel Choir. And she talks about, she's like, the next Orpheus is going to make it. And we have to sing to that person. So I feel that really deeply. La, 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 la. La, 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 la.
Rachel, you're the artistic director of Team, a Brooklyn-based ensemble dedicated to creating new work about the experience of living in America. That experience has certainly changed over the last week. What is Team currently working on in light of what's happening?
Oh, well, I mean, I just talked about it. Reconstruction is the new Team show. And that's going to premiere, you know, an old friend once joked that at one point our acronym, we had to become, I say this shamefully because we didn't want to, but our an accountant when we were first like incorporating told us that we needed to become an acronym because we would never get a business license for the team. And so we like actually our first group writing assignment was like, what can we stand for? And we ended up being a combination of a few different ideas. And this was only on our legal paperwork, but it was the Theater of the Emerging American Moment, which I am shamed about because it's too pretentious. But a friend further ribbed us at one point because it takes us a really long time to make a play. Because, like, most importantly, and this is not a part of the mission statement that you read, but the team writes all of our work collaboratively through what we call a horizontal writing process. And we edit it through consensus. I mean, it's a crazy process that I have quite proudly described as aggressively inefficient.
There are lots of fights. Is there fighting? Tell me about the fights.
There's actually, like, I would say we have survived as long as we have because we're all very good at passive aggression. So, like, right? So, like, we're able to sort of still be polite even when we're raging at each other for the most part. What were you going to say, Jennifer?
No, I was just saying my favorite joke is that, all right, whatever fucked up way you want to do it, that's fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how we function until, like, you get to the next day and you're over it. And if you're not over it the next day, then someone totally does bring it up again. Anyway, I was just going to say a friend joked that we should actually call ourselves TRAM, the Theater of the Recent American Moment, because it takes us so long to make a show. Right. So maybe in like 10 years, we'll make a COVID piece. I just don't know.
Amazing. Well, as Stephen Sondheim wrote very, very keenly, art isn't easy, you know?
That's true.
Well, you've been very outspoken, most famously in your Tony Award speech last year, about creating space and opportunities for women and people of color within the theater industry. Do you worry that this pandemic, and with everything sort of being put on hold and everyone kind of scattered, has the potential to put that vital work on hold?
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, like, everything's on hold, right?
True.
So
yeah.
I guess I should say what concerns me most are the artists, and particularly, obviously, to the question, the women and artists of color who maybe were making a premiere that got sidelined or shafted, and I think it's imperative that we not forget. So I'm thinking about Celine Song's beautiful show, Endlings. I'm thinking about Martina Mayork's Sanctuary City, which, I hope will resurge. I'm thinking about all the Natalie Portman, C.A. Johnson's show that was at MCC. I think probably the numbers are countless. And because our field so profoundly kind of prioritizes experience and depth of impact, and we tend to measure impact in very sadly narrow ways of like the number of people who saw it and was one of those people, one of the two... you know, white men who review for the New York Times, and did they like it? Like that's obviously a really narrow critique, but criteria, but that criteria does have a like technically measurable impact on someone's earning power and the opportunities that they're going to get flowing out of the previous opportunity. So I just worry about all the shows that died and cannot be lost. So I hope we do think about that. And then I don't know. I think it really remains to be seen as to whether people are going to come out of this and be really scared, or people are going to come out of this and be really brave. And of course, those two things are sisters to each other. Like, I don't think there's actually any bravery without fear. So I don't know. I'm attached to a show, Lempicka, that is written by a woman, Carson Kreitzer, who did the book and lyrics. Then Matt Gould did the music. And Carson has spent her entire career working sort of as far away from Broadway as you can get. And this show is now on like an intensely exciting Broadway-bound trajectory. And and so hopefully we'll be adding her voice. And I know a lot of works in development that I think are going to come crashing into, you know, the sunrise as we move out of this. So that's thrilling.
Yeah. Rachel, it's Jamie here. I just have to say, I saw Lempicka twice at Williamstown.
I did.
I saw it back to back, which is rare. I can count on one hand the shows that I've seen in the afternoon and then gone back to the evening or gone back the next day. And Lempicka to this day, and that was what, a summer ago?
2018, yeah.
Yeah, so two years ago, and that show still haunts me. I cannot wait.
Yay, Jamie, that makes me thrilled.
Rob and I have time in our calendar marked out to go to La Jolla. Hopefully, who knows if we'll be able to do that or not. But we're very excited. It's such a beautiful, important piece of theater.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. I feel obviously the same. And like, it's gotten so much better since Williamstown. I'm really excited to say also.
Funny how shows can do that when you keep working on
them. I know, right?
And loving them. I also have to say, that I love the notion of the next Orpheus is going to make it. I feel like that's an anthem for our time right now. It's really beautiful. And speaking of anthems, I think in these troubled times, before we let you go, we're all sort of leaning on music. And for me, it's show tunes. Is there a particular song or something in your playlist that's helping you get through these troubled times?
Well, actually, I feel like this is cheating, but I have all these new demos from Lempicka. And so, and I'm a runner, and very often I don't have time to run. And I should be clear, I'm an extremely slow runner. My body is achy, but I have been running around the park every day and listening to these new demos and staging in my brain. And that like really makes the time go by.
Oh, I bet it also it must also just help you keep focused on the show and moving forward with it.
Yo, God, totally. Absolutely. I'm very happy to say I think we do have, you know, a path ahead of us because the show is so damn good. And we've been very blessed with people who believe in it.
Well, I'm not saying this because we have you trapped on our show for a few minutes, but Hadestown is definitely the score that's getting me through these times right now.
Oh, I'm delighted about that. Nice.
Well, thank you so much for your time. We're gonna let you go.
Great.
Rachel, again, thank you so much for coming on and joining us today.
Such a pleasure, truly.
We raise our cups and drink them up. We raise them high and drink them dry to Orpheus and all of us. Good night, brothers. Good night.
Rob here with You May Be Wondering. As we talked about with Rachel, everyone has a role to play in this time of pandemic. From helping your elderly or infirm neighbors to get groceries, to rallying your local community to support small businesses, or donating money or medical supplies to those in need. The list goes on. If you're a fan of live performance, and the theater in particular, which, let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, chances are that you are, you may be wondering what you can do to help the theater community. Well, as Rachel suggested, the number one thing is to go online to actorsfund.org and make a donation in any amount to the Actors Fund. which, despite its name, serves all professionals, not just actors, in the film, theater, television, music, opera, radio, and dance world through direct support programs that address their health and welfare in times of crisis and need. When your job is live performance, you can't work from home. So everyone from performers to backstage staff, ushers, and beyond are feeling the economic impact of this pandemic right now. Something else Rachel alluded to is supporting the constellation of smaller nonprofit companies and artists across the landscape of New York theater and theater nationwide. Chances are, wherever you are, you're not far from a nonprofit arts organization that serves your community and relies on ticket sales and donations to make ends meet. Without performances, budgets are going to get tight, and some companies might be forced to shutter. If you had upcoming tickets to a show at BAM or City Center, St. Anne's, or the Park Avenue Armory that won't be happening due to the shutdown, what critic Helen Shaw calls a phantom ticket, consider donating the value of that ticket back to the organization in lieu of taking a refund. Companies like Roundabout, Manhattan Theater Club, and Second Stage that also have Broadway houses are feeling the crunch, but so too are off-Broadway nonprofits like New York Theater Workshop, Ars Nova, The Transport Group, The Vineyard Theater, Club Thumb, La Mama, and The Public Theater, just to name a few. Indeed, the list goes on. Getting through all this will require people coming together to support each other, but we also need government action and other institutions chipping in. To that end, the New York Community Trust has announced that it is administering the NYC COVID-19 Response and Impact Fund, a massive system of grants and interest-free loans funded by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, Bloomberg Philanthropies, the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund to the tune of some $75 million, all earmarked for social services, arts, and cultural institutions. That might sound like a lot of money, and let's face it, it is. But given the breadth of organizations out there, just the sheer number, it won't be enough to solve for every loss being sustained right now and in the weeks and months to come. And so while I know that everyone is feeling some degree of economic anxiety right now, if you do have the means, think about what artists and companies you love and would hate to see disappear from the cultural landscape, and consider making a donation of any amount. We'll all get through this by being there for each other.
Hi, it's Jamie. That's our show. Thanks for listening. And as always, you can hear us anytime on iTunes. The Fabulous Invalid is a production of O&M Etc. and The Fabulous Invalid LLC, and a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. Our theme music is by Lucky Chops. Today's episode was edited and engineered by Aaron Kaufman. You can find us online at fabulousinvalid.com and on social media at Fabulous Invalid, and on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you find podcasts. Be sure to tune in Wednesday and stay safe and be well. Turn your
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.